This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Got our next guest in the studio, a good friend of mine, Paul Miller. Paul, a young journalist, now working in Cambodia for the Southeast Asia Globe. Paul, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
I'm interested. Journalism's obviously an industry under significant change at the moment. We heard the news about Fairfax during the week. How, as a young person working in the field, do you sort of navigate those sort of existential challenges in the industry?
Well, I moved to Cambodia, so I don't know
so you got out.
How much faith I have in things back here.
So what prompted that move?
So when I was studying at uni, we were often told that if we wanted to get practical, sort of hands-on experience, the best places to go would either be a regional paper or overseas, to especially Southeast Asia has quite a few English language papers, which enjoy quite a respected reputation. And then my partner got a job at one of them, so I followed her over and found a job at a different one.
There you are.
Because that could have been a bit awkward.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what kind of articles are you writing? What's your brief in Phnom Penh?
So Southeast Asia Globe, it's a monthly magazine. It's based in Phnom Penh in Cambodia, but it covers the whole ASEAN region. And because it's quite a small staff, I end up covering everything from politics and current affairs to arts and culture to just general lifestyle pieces, which is, I think, fantastic experience for young journalists having to do a little bit of everything.
And is the workforce quite young in a lot of these institutions?
It is. We have our editor-in-chief's in his 30s, which makes him by far the oldest and baldest man in the room.
I'm interested that, you know, English language publications in Asia Pacific, there's a number of them. Some of them have a very long and a very fine history. Mm. What is the main readership? Is it, obviously English speakers
or expats
who read it? But you know, is there a main readership group that you have?
So speaking just specifically to Southeast Asia Globe, because it is a monthly magazine with more long form pieces, we generally aim at sort of tertiary educated professionals and the expat community in particular as well. And I think it really depends what you're reading. There's in Phnom Penh, there are sort of three main daily newspapers. There's the Cambodia Daily and the Phnom Penh Post, and then there's the Khmer Times, which is English language, but I think geared much more to a Cambodian audience. Mm.
And in the Cambodian context, Paul, the political context is a fair bit different to what it is here in Australia. Do you see the politics?
Just be careful. You want him to be able to get back.
do I see the political situation?
Yeah,
in
how
Cambodia?
Does that influence the way journalists go about their business?
Well, this is one of the great shames is that it has a very different impact on you depending on whether you're a foreign journalist. I'm not going to say Western journalist because quite a lot of the expats do come from other parts of the world. But if you're a foreign journalist or a Cambodian journalist, as a foreign journalist, at least up until this point, I've never felt particularly stifled or under threat. I know Cambodian colleagues and Cambodian friends who have found themselves, especially there's a national election in 2018, and the commune elections, the local elections are in June this year. And so in the lead up to that, when we have seen an enormous sort of crackdown on political opposition and political dissent, there have been reporters who have felt
awkward.
Well, they've got families to think of.
Yeah.
And last year in, I believe, July, there was a political analyst and commentator, Kem Lay, who was very popular, criticized both the government and the main opposition party, And just after a Global Witness report focused on the enormous level of nepotism and corruption within the Prime Minister's family, which he endorsed on radio, was gunned down in a while he was drinking his morning coffee.
Wow.
If the Cambodian courts are to be believed, was a dispute over a debt by a man he'd never met before.
Right.
But
to someone who didn't know him, just decided to shoot him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Paul, how does it feel as someone working in journalism to see what's going on in the US at the moment? I mean, we were talking about how politics influences media, and you've got the President of the United States regularly mocking, disparaging members of the press in a very public forum on Twitter. As a journalist in that profession, how do you react to that?
I think it's a terrible, terrible, terrible thing to do. I also think it kind of speaks to the growing disconnect between the media and the people of the States. I think there is a very real distrust in the media, and I think he's exploiting that to avoid scrutiny. Interestingly enough, Prime Minister Hun Sen in Cambodia has cited several of President Trump's comments about the media and what media should be allowed in which press conferences and things as a precedent for, if the US, this bastion of freedom and democracy, is being selective over who can cover their press conferences and who can ask questions, then who's to say
and
that
I mean,
Cambodia?
Just across in the South China Sea, you've got the President of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, sort of acting...
the Punisher, yes.
Yes.
As he loves to know.
What have you, in being sort of proximate to what's going on in the Philippines, what have you heard from what's going on there?
It's quite interesting to see Duterte's reputation in the West, because certainly a lot of what you hear is... And understandably, is what you hear is the ongoing crackdown on drug-related crime and the extrajudicial killings, which he has been allegedly party to since his time in Davao as mayor of Davao City. But it's interesting to see that he's also has quite a lot of popular support, not just for that, although that is, I think...
That's sort of his centerpiece of his agenda.
His centerpiece, but he's also, overseen a sweeping crackdown on corruption and...
So is he draining the swamp?
And probably a lot more effectively than Trump is. I'm not going to endorse President Rodrigo Duterte's policies by any means, but something which didn't get much traction is that he has made a massive concerted effort to try and increase access to contraception amongst poorer Filipino women, which has seen a huge amount of pushback from the Catholic Church, which is incredibly powerful still in the Philippines, and is both an opponent of his in the extrajudicial killings and in... widespread free access to contraception.
We think in Australia that our politics are robust. Well, they're not really. Not compared to a lot of our neighbours around Asia. There was a remark, and I don't know whether it was correct, but it was attributed to the Chinese president, that meeting with Donald Trump, it was a little story, and I don't think it's true. Someone wanted it to be true, but that Trump said, you need to pay attention to human rights and democracy and da da. And the Chinese president said, what, you want us to be more like you? and of course China, is one of the best examples of where the media is not able to report what it would like, and that the state, the South China Morning Post, an extraordinary newspaper, which is now under the influence of the Chinese government because of some shareholdings. How difficult is it, Paul, as a journalist, to continue to write the stories that you know that have to be written and to write the factual stories, knowing that the pressure is there, and whilst you might be feeling it, may not be feeling it at the moment, you know that they're watching. And how does it feel... when you're at the keyboard and you're writing this stuff, you're looking over your shoulder?
I think there's, in a Cambodian context, there's practical concerns where a lot of the major businesses by necessity have to be linked to the government, or at least on good terms with the government. So I think, and in terms of a magazine which supports itself through advertisers, there is the knowledge that even aside from this sort of, the kind of... overt censorship that you see in Thailand or increasingly in Myanmar, there is also this this kind of sword of Damocles hanging over you, that should the Prime Minister denounce your publication and sort of, you know, encourage businesses to pull away the advertising, then you know, he can very easily cut you.
You don't exist, and I know Chris wants to ask something, but you know, no advertising, no editorial.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, whilst the two must never meet, there has to be an accommodation of some sort. But the pressure that can be brought to bear, that basically, you know, guess what? All our advertisers disappear. We might put out one more issue, but that's it.
Mm.
You know, so how do you deal with that? I mean, it's a, having been a journalist myself, I know what a challenge it is, and that was in the Australian market, and it wasn't News Limited. But the challenge of that, not just the implied physical threat, but again, you know, how do you rationalise that? How do you, you know, write what you need to write and what you want to write and what your readers want to read and balance that against the commercial reality?
I think I'm very, very fortunate in that the rest of my editorial team has always been incredibly supportive. Have an amazing editor-in-chief. We've just gotten a new editor in the time that I've been in Australia, who I haven't had a chance to work for, but he's an old stalwart of the media scene in Cambodia. Mm-hmm. So I feel very, very good about working with him. There's always going to be that line that you need to walk. I think that I've been very fortunate for over a year now to have been able to enjoy a great level of freedom in reporting on the stories that I want to report on.
And Paul, I've heard from your partner Aaron that one of the stories you really enjoyed working on was about a David Hasselhoff electronic dance music festival. Could you tell us a bit about that?
This may seem tone deaf, considering what we've just been talking about in terms of like real political reporting and threat. But like I said, I get to write about a wide variety of topics, and this one was a 3-night electronic dance music festival on a cruise ship sailing between Singapore and Penang, captained by the man who brought down the Berlin Wall himself, Mr. David Hasselhoff, who played both a DJ set and some show tunes during a gala dinner. And it was one of the most nightmarish things that I've ever witnessed. I think the three main nationalities were Thai, Singaporean, and Australians, and all of these rich kids just like going absolutely nuts in international waters. And I think partly because they were, you were speaking to people from Malaysia and people from Singapore, and they were saying, well, you know, if you have enough money, you can enjoy a certain level of freedom and a very liberal lifestyle. But, you know, there is still that pressure on them to, you know, conform to society's expectations. So having an opportunity to cut loose and just have a good time, I think...
And Paul,
on display.
I'm sure there's going to be some budding journalists listening to the show this morning. Now that you're a few years out from your time at university, what would you say to university students or even high school students who are thinking about working in journalism in some capacity?
I mean, I'd probably give them a lot of the same advice that I got, that you really can't go do much better in some cases than going regional or going to a paper where you are getting that. And this is something that I wish I had more of, but that daily reporting experience, that's sort of, you know, where you are pumping out stories a day and you have to cover a lot of different topics. I know that that's not, especially when you're sort of, if you're growing up in the metropolitan area where you're looking at, you know, the Age or the Herald Sun.
Sure.
And you're thinking, you want a job there, but Fairfax keeps on slashing the budget.
Anyway, that back to basics reporting is a really good place to start.
I think, you know, and especially more and more, like that back to basics reporting is including more digital training, more experience, you know, shooting your taking your own photos and shooting your own footage,
and
editing your own stories now that they don't have any sub editing.
But it's also things like podcasting, and that we're seeing such a growth in podcasts. Are we ever going to hear you take the airwaves for the Paul Miller podcast?
I don't know if I'd ever name it after myself, probably. But
you're getting experience this morning.
I think that is something that I would like to do more of. Especially knowing that long-form podcasts do have an audience out there.
They do.
I think it's
huge
it's,
audience.
And it must be, as people working in radio yourself, it must be fascinating watching this almost resurgence in popularity. So
we think of ourselves as new media.
So. we're the innovators.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.